to another week of the Geek Whisperers, recording live from Spice World in Austin. I'm John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matt Brender.
And we have a very special guest with us today. This is one of a few podcasts we'll be doing here live on site at Spice World in Austin. We were invited by the Spiceworks folks. Today we're going to talk about communities, colliding communities, overlapping circles, and why we gather in the tribes that we gather in. Very pleased to welcome to this podcast our guest today, which is Matt Simmons. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, John. Thanks a lot. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. Matt, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, maybe what you do and where you hang out and kind of that sort of thing.
Your favorite tribes, of course.
Sure. So, Matt Simmons, I work at Northeastern University right now. I do networking virtualization primarily. Historically speaking, I have done mostly IT for small businesses. And I started a while back blogging, and I blog at Standalone Sysadmin, and I'm on Twitter at Standalone SA. And, you know, as a result of kind of getting online and finding people, I've gotten in several communities and kind of built some myself, actually, that I'm really proud of and I've gotten a lot out of. So I'm happy to talk to you guys about this. This is great.
Cool. I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you also is I know you're involved with the LISA organization.
Yeah, the LISA conference, which is put on by Usenix.
Yeah. Okay, so catch me up. Total ignorance here. It's not even a straw man question. I know nothing. So talk to me. What is
LISA,
this?
Well, LISA is the large, it started off anyway, as the large installation system administrator subgroup of Usenix. And Usenix was the original people who invented the word neckbeard.
And is that as a service?
To be honest, they started early enough that neckbeard wasn't even a thing yet.
It was just something you had on your neck.
Right. Well, no, and I knew them 20 years ago. I mean, the last time I had a root password was probably 20 years ago and at university. And my sysadmin went away for the week, and he said, okay, I'm going away for the week, John. Here is the root password. Do not use it.
That's trust. That is trust.
Do not do anything with it, but here it is in case you need it. It wasn't in a sealed envelope or anything. But, and then he went off to Usenix or LISA, I forget, one of the two, and he was, you know, they did whatever he did. I thought it was kind of interesting that those sysadmins of the, and this was the, you know, 90s or whatever, were gathering.
Yeah.
What I've always found interesting and kind of weird is that why didn't, I mean, we talk about tribes a lot.
Absolutely.
We come out of, over the last couple of years, of vendor tribes, right? Mm-hmm. The VMware tribe,
Enterprise
Cisco tribe, the EMC tribe, yeah. We are now here at Spiceworks, cross-vendor tribe, very interesting, different feel, maybe we'll get into that a little bit. But I always wondered why Usenix and LISA didn't take over the world.
So, I mean, part of it is because of the kinds of things that you said. You mentioned the word neckbeard, right? Like, maybe that's a little tough. But, so, if you look at...
I mean it with affection.
I know. As affectionate as it can mean the term neckbeard.
Yeah.
So, look at what LISA was originally. You said large installation. This was from a time when a large installation meant 25 computers.
Mm. Right? What?
Yeah, not even kidding.
Teach me of history.
Right. I mean, like, this is... Yeah. Seriously, like, if you had hundreds of megs of disk space, you could come to this conference and learn how to manage it. Now, since then, the entire IT world and the people who manage it have changed, right? And there's been this gradual progression of both the technology and the best practices for managing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of fractured, right? So you've got the enterprise people now that kind of went with the Microsoft world. And Usenix never really, I mean, they launched an NT conference for a couple of years, but it didn't go anywhere. They didn't push it very hard. And so now you kind of have the people who run traditional, you know, I'm not going to say legacy, but very traditional infrastructures are still kind of, you know, being appealing. LISA still looks appealing to those kind of people. Mm. But if you're running a large-scale enterprise right now on a Microsoft platform and, you know, the kind of people that
which is most people.
Most people, right? Yeah. And that's why the numbers at LISA are dwindling.
Mm. Mm.
So system administration in general, which is my personal tribe. Like, if I identify with a tribe, it is the system administrators, IT operators of the world, right?
Which is different because a lot of people call themselves IT pros now. So that's kind of a different culture, a different tattoo or something.
It really is, yeah.
Different handshake.
So if you're running servers right now, right? Chances are you're identifying with that culture anyway, right? Because mm-hmm. you're not running infrastructure, whatever. But the current trend in that is DevOps, right? And the reason that DevOps sprung up, everybody cool with DevOps?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's really managing a relationship. It's between the people who write the code and the people who run the code, right? And if they don't talk, if they're just silos and they throw code over and you know it breaks there and devs aren't responsible or vice versa, it's a bad situation. People like Amazon, right? Google, Mozilla was originally back 10 iterations ago. These people started scaling when the web became of age, and the old practices weren't able to keep up. And so they kind of formed this community of people who had to deal with problems at web scale, mm-hmm. right? And that became the DevOps movement. And then you've got the Windows side that's branching out and becoming what we're seeing here and what we're seeing at VMworld, stuff like that, right? So giant scale there. Who does that leave in the middle? It leaves the traditional system administrators who are managing, what probably aren't large infrastructures anymore in the grand scheme of things. But so it's really these three big segments, and the smallest right now is the one that goes to Lisa, right? And so we're seeing this, and I was on the program committee this year at Lisa for the first time, and that was awesome because we really, for the first time, I think, we have this zeitgeist of, things are broken, and we really need to fix them, Mm-hmm. Clearly the world's not where we were, and we need to start trying to lead again. Because when your sysadmin, John, went there, in the 90s, it was probably the best conference in the world for people like him.
Right. Yeah.
And it's totally not been like that for a while.
Well, and this is so cool. What it's an interesting way of this trifurcated view of the world is kind of interesting.
I like it. I just like the Venn diagram of it.
Well, and the evolution and the history of it. Because the other question I was going to say is, how did you pick which tribe? How did you decide which tribe you went to? And where are your people now? So I have a million questions. But go, John.
Trifurcated view of the world. That is really fascinating because the one side of the world, and it's interesting that you put Spiceworks and VMware in the same camp because, I draw two circles for that too, because what we've seen is you get people who are in a vendor camp and they become, even if they try not to, they become a little bit priests of the machine. They're like, I'm an EMC guy. I'm going to pick on EMC. I'm
feel free. Guy.
I have a VMAX. This is what I do. It's my job. I take care of it. I go to the EMC conference. I take the EMC certs. I'm an EMC guy.
But, John, that's really funny to me because I still say that, go the EMC way. I was there for 5 years. I haven't been for almost a year, and I'm still just, identify with that. And I'm actually working, across vendors and working with NetApp now very closely on their technology, and I still have these moments of, am I cheating on myself here? I feel like I should apologize for a lot of what I've said about you. No, but, all these cool technologies, but, you do in the vendor camp, especially enterprise, where it's long sales cycles, it's expensive acquisition, so there's a lot of the violent energy that goes towards one camp or another.
But it's diminishing. It's in some ways it's diminishing. It hurts your career.
It can be.
And what people are coming to me and asking for, and I think the health of things like Spiceworld are that this cross vendor conversation, right?
Exactly.
Which is people are saying, we want to have this conversation, but it's with VMware and Cisco, and they're fighting, and I can't have it in their venues, and I need to have this conversation, and then it has to include open source, and they don't.
Your point there of is this something that we are internalizing? So this is this intrinsic thing where you identify with a tribe and you feel like you have to push that out. Versus, is this a new way we have to think of? Are these truly external forces that are saying you can't have these conversations there, or don't do that.
Same thing. Internal, the external makes the internal. The internal makes the external. Right?
I don't know.
Are you going to start quoting Walt Whitman?
A song of myself.
I don't know. I mean, in some ways, I think that's one of the questions we need to address with Matt of how do you avoid the mental trap that you can get in? Because Matt has just confessed, that he's still got it a little bit. How do we get outside our own circles? How do we come above and transition between?
So I think honestly, the most important thing we can do is take a step back and get perspective on what we're actually doing here, right? So because
that sounds ridiculous.
I know, right?
We don't need perspective. We need numbers.
My storage is way better than your storage. No, like we're solving problems, right? We're using technology and we're building things to solve problems for companies and for the people that are employed by the companies or that the companies sell things to, right?
Okay.
And so if we have this culture where everybody's fighting and there's all these hard lines and, you know, like tectonic fault line, right, between two continents, and that is the Cisco and the EMC of the world, and not a good example, but anyway, if we maintain that kind of stress and that kind of response, then we're just going to encourage bad experiences for everybody involved, right? And I think really what we're seeing, there's this cross-pollination really of ideas, especially in places here like Spice World, is people learning to interoperate, right? It's building relationships between companies, the people who use the technology, and then giving the end user a better experience in the long run. I think that's a very positive thing.
No, and I love this. I just want to say, we're quoting from a customer in the wild, people. Like, no one likes to see their parents fight, you know?
Right.
It doesn't, and the tectonic fault, I think, is a great reminder to vendors that if you do try to create a culture of us versus them, it can have, we've talked about, negative impact on your career, because what if you need to work for somebody else some other time? Customers, you know, we're going to use your one example, is to serve as the voice for many. Nobody likes that. And in some ways, I think that community overlay is a way to bypass and get back to the technology conversation instead of the where did it come from. Have some of the where did it come from, talk about the specifics, but I do love that idea of start with the problem, start with the shared. I mean, communal, that's the root of it.
Yeah. I gotta ask, Matt, like, of all the titles that people are picking and mostly making up these days, why in the world would you stick with sysadmin?
For me, I work at a university, and our infrastructure, so I have this, can I
go, okay, go,
awesome.
Please.
Yeah. So,
you just got so excited, whatever you're about to do, the answer is yes.
Okay, so, I'm gonna draw an analogy here. There are three kinds of cities in the world. There is Ephesus. If you've never heard of Ephesus, Ephesus was a city in Turkey. You might have heard of it if you read the Bible. It was the letters to the Ephesians. That's the city. Right now, Ephesus is inland in Turkey because it silted up the harbor and it was unusable and there were earthquakes and invasions. And so basically, it's like a city of 100,000 people got up and left. You can walk through it now and it is beautiful. It's amazing.
Huh.
And you should totally do that. Then there are infrastructures. There are cities. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Let the analogy out of the bag.
No.
We'll cut that out.
There are cities and infrastructures like Phoenix. Phoenix, if you've ever looked at a map of Phoenix, is kind of amazing because it's a grid. It's like somebody took graph paper and then labeled them as streets because there was literally nothing there, right? They weren't building on top of anything. They didn't have to deal with water. They didn't have to do. I mean, like, it is a planned city like I used to do in SimCity on the Nintendo, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was the ideal. And then there are cities and there are infrastructures like Rome. Rome is a city that has been continuously inhabited for over 2,000 years. You still have aqueducts in Rome feeding the fountains that are passing buildings created in the last 5 years. I mean, this is a city that has really learned to live with the history and build alongside and keep it while maintaining a modern, you know,
modern
giant. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? So it's this combination of the two things. That is the world I inhabit at Northeastern University. We have what could probably pass as a reference infrastructure for Microsoft, right? Because of the licensing agreements that Microsoft has with the university, we can do just about anything, and we do it exactly according to the book. But at the same time, it's coexisting with shell scripts that are written and Perl scripts that were written in 93. And so, you know, it is this dance of making these things interoperate, right? And so lots of the historical things that carry through are things like my title, which is actually, I lie whenever anybody asks my title. It is Networking, Virtualization, and Research Compute Cluster Administrator. And there are three commas in my title. Like, that's ridiculous. It's things like that are holdovers. They're vestiges of the past, but sometimes they're necessary, right? My title's not.
Yeah.
But.
Well, and I would argue we have talked, Matt, you and I have talked about silos and careers and the storage guys versus the networking guys versus the virtualization guys and security guys. What better word than systems could overcome all the silos? You're a systems administrator, not a storage administrator, not a security administrator, not a networking administrator. You take care of systems.
It's well said. It's funny.
No haters.
No, I wasn't hating. I was actually leading the witness because I think this is a conversation that needs to be more public. But I'm a huge fan of the discipline and conversation around system administration. It is a everyone come to the table and communicate type medium. There's no differentiation like, no, that's my technology, not your technology. We're all delivering a service continuously together. We're integrating aqueducts, also known as mainframes, along with like new shiny, beautiful skyscrapers of hyperconvergence and crazy architectures that are available to you today. And it just has to work for everybody. And I love that it's not about the borders that you're building, it's about the systems that you're building.
It does sound old-fashioned, though.
It is old-fashioned.
It does sound a little old-fashioned.
So, I mean, lots of infrastructures...
like, if I went to a web page labeled sysadmin, it would probably be old.
Yeah, you could, unless you're going to mine.
but that is the thing. That's why I led you that way, asking about why do you pick that title, because it seems like everyone is kind of scared of that being antiquated, so they're burning that bridge and running to new ones, like calling themselves DevOps engineer, and sometimes not realizing the irony of that title. and all these other sort of architects and builders of things, but there's something about sysadministration that's like, it is about those concentric circles that we started with. It brings the Linux, Unix background along with the huge enterprise vendors and the small SMB vendors and brings everyone together.
It's like I don't remember the number, forgive me, that's like a cardinal sin, but there's an XKCD comic that's like all about sysadmins, and it's like, you know, there's a hostage situation and they've taken over the building and somebody came in and like, you know, they'd cut the cable so you didn't have networking. Somebody came in and repaired the cables but left the hostages, and they're like, wait, did he free the hostages? No, he left the hostages. Oh God, we're dealing with a sysadmin. Like, it is really like... Like you said, Matt, it's about getting the job done.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And really, that's kind of what we do.
But sometimes missing the point.
Sometimes missing the point.
Yeah.
Which may actually lead us into this conversation of which tribe do you choose naturally versus when do you push yourself outside of your circle?
That's before we go right there, I want to finish the Lisa conversation with, we left it on a cliffhanger. You guys are you're on the planning committee.
Yes.
You're going to make yourself more relevant in this multimodal IT world that we're going into. Is there a quick catchphrase of how you guys are going to do that? A slogan?
I think a slogan is get out the cruft, right?
Okay.
Like, go to the Lisa webpage and just check out the program. I mean, that's all I ask. You can say whatever you want about the organization, and I say this to everybody who I've talked to, just check out this year's program. And that should tell you more than you ever would hear from me.
Cool. We will link to it in the show notes, and I'm totally a fan of these, you know, cross-vendor, let's get what we're all about. Let's help people.
Yeah.
And segues into what we were thinking about. Segues into segues. Is that it's good to be with your own people and to kind of reinforce, but then when you have the overlap, it can pull you out of your own universe and maybe not so much navel-gazing and challenge you to think in new ways. So you've got a great comfortable circle that makes a lot of sense. How do you decide where else to go? Because time is not infinite, so how do you decide which communities to participate in?
Some of them, you know, the ones that you don't fall into naturally, you either have to go looking for or have them dropped in your lap.
Mm.
Like, I was, I'm not going to say drag kicking and screaming, but, you know, I have a blog, right? And so Greg Farrow, who runs Etheromind, talked to Stephen Foskett way back in the day and was like, hey, can we have Matt come? And I'm not sure I'm an awesome fit for Tech Field Day, but I went, and like that was an eye-opening experience because I did not have the enterprise knowledge because I came from a small, medium business, right, an SMB. And that was eye-opening, and I've met so many people and gotten so many great network connections and a much better perspective of the industry as a whole because of that experience, right, that I would never have gotten if I, you know, Stephen had called me and I just hung up the phone, right? Like, you have to be open to the idea of new things, and you have to go and try, right?
I had actually never thought about, that's a drop the mic moment for me, of the impact on your joining that community of delegates, as Stephen Foskett calls whenever you go to a mm-hmm. tech field day. And you think about it from the vendor perspective, again, admitting my own vendor hat too firmly on my head, obviously, and you think about the output and the content created, but I hadn't thought about how changing that could be to have someone come in who maybe hadn't been part of a panel of peers like that to come into a new mix. That's a really interesting concept of a kind of a micro community, but how impactful it is, and then you take it out into your own communities of influence.
Yeah, yeah. I got an excellent chance, actually, because Peter Tsai, who works at Spiceworks, was partially responsible, anyway, for getting me involved in coming here. And he had been talking to some other people, and I got him in touch with people. And Nick at Spiceworks, I don't remember his last name. I feel bad about that. But I feel like I'm a terrible person.
terrible.
Was doing a series of interviews with people, and I was one of the people. And I got him in touch with some other people who are now speaking for the first time. And so I'm trying to encourage this cross-pollination, like, because yeah. I'll frequently go to a party, and I will just talk to two people at the same time. And, you know, yeah. I'm like, wait, you guys don't know each other? How do all of my friends not know each other? Like,
yes.
This is crazy. And so last night at the Spice World party, I made it a point. I'm like, I'm going to meet everyone I meet, I'm going to make sure they meet everyone else I know. Like, so I'm just going to drag people together, and, like, you know, Jeffrey Snover and Tom Limoncelli and you guys, and, you know, it's just...
Hey, we don't know those guys, so we would like to...
Okay, well, come to the party tonight, the 80s party, right? We'll do this. Okay.
It's like person systems administration. You're connecting the network.
There's definitely like life, right? It's a series of events that affect the future, right? I think I got introduced to you through Tech Field Day. I've been following your blog ever since. You know, see you pop up every now and then, different stuff, and then invite and saw you were here at this conference, and then we invited you here on the podcast. So
thank you for that.
It's a whole circle of whatever.
And also pull back to, again, put my influence marketing hat on of, like, to remind all the practitioners who might listen, the marketing practitioners, I know you're self-loathing, as we always like to talk about, but the opportunity, if you find somebody like Matt, again, who's that great combination of technical skill and a people person
connector.
And a connector, yeah. Then there's so much value in engaging and finding out, listening, and seeing if you know, finding marketing programs, finding ways to engage, because it provides an opportunity for Matt, who wants to connect. If you lower the burden for him to connect with more people, then something great could come of it. So,
yeah. And it takes time, too, right? This has been a process of a couple years.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Now, that's how we talk. That's how you get connected. You say yes.
Yeah.
So that,
yes,
but,
and.
But Amy's original question was, I think, more, how do you pick, which tribes do you feel comfortable in? Or where do you feel at home? Or that sort of thing.
So, I mean, it's really... You just have to try new tribes as you encounter them, right? And go out and search for them. Ask your people, right? There's like an adage that says if you're the smartest person in the room, you know, you're in the wrong room. Like, if you're the most connected person in the room, make sure everyone else is connected and then leave the room, so find another room, right? Mm. Find more people to
connect
with.
I like that. Yeah. Connect the dots and then walk away and make new dots.
Right. Like, build a network, right?
Yeah.
You want to build a network around yourself, but don't do it for yourself, right? Do it for the people you're
so
connecting, because it's so better for them.
That's another. We're in a room. We'll take a picture. There's a lot of mics. So Matt's like walking around dropping the meat.
I guess to better answer your question, if you don't try new communities, you won't know which ones you feel most comfortable in.
Yeah.
Right. So
and it can change over time too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and that has, honestly. When I first are you guys aware of Reddit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Reddit's a series of communities. When I first got on Reddit and got involved, I was like, well, all right. So there is a sysadmin community, but they're like 300 people, and nothing had happened. And so I talked to the mod, and I'm like, hey, you know, look, do you want help with this? Do you want me to be, you know, whatever? If you don't want it, I'll take it and do something with it. And he was like, well, I'll make you a mod too. And so we have, over the past few years, built from 300. We have like 80,000 people
on
Reddit.
It's a good subreddit.
At times, it's a good subreddit. When it hit around 40,000 people, there's this, I mean, like, it's like any other community of 40,000 people.
I mean, it's no
people.
Cable porn or anything like that.
Well, a few things are cable porn, honestly.
Wow.
I really enjoy cable porn. Anyway, go ahead.
No, so... I mean, you have to be careful, right? If you're running a community, I don't think I run a community. I just moderate that one sometimes. But you kind of get this. I can't say the actual name of the law, but look up the John Gabriel Greater Internet and just hit enter. It's the idea that if you get a community of people that have anonymous access, they're going to be jerks, right? And the, as the number of people of the network increase, if there are, you know, one jerk out of every 10, by the time you get 40,000, that's a lot of jerks. So you've got to be careful.
I want to see the algorithm. I hope somebody will whiteboard this out and submit it. So listeners, it's on you. I want to see the jerk algorithm.
Yeah.
I
don't...
Did you see the finale of Silicon Valley? The TV
show? No, don't worry.
We're not going to go there. Anyway.
It's just after time, like... A community can outgrow itself if you're not careful, if it's not strictly moderated. And I think that the subreddit right now is really hard to... The signal-to-noise ratio is not great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a heavy-handed moderation team could do it, but I'm not interested in doing that because it's a free-form community, right?
Yeah.
So I have been less and less involved in that. And there are some networks that I've been involved with that fall. You know, and you know, I'm constantly looking for new ones. Like, I'm interested in networks that are open, that are available, and that try to get things accomplished or try to help people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm on a couple of mailing lists that are invite-only, and I don't spend a lot of time there because that's helping the 10 people that are on that list.
Mm-hmm.
But people who are like, we really want to build something. I like building things, and I like helping with that.
Nice.
That's really cool.
So maybe let's move over to the blog for a minute. You've been blogging for a while. That puts you... There's a couple impacts of a blog often. One is on your career. It's a little bit different working in a university because I come from an academic background and, you know, people just give less, care less. I mean, they do what you want. It's a university. You're supposed to be kind of semi-autonomous.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we ask, well, how does your boss think about your blogging? And we get different answers for that. But career-wise and then also interacting, I mean, are you on people's radar? Do you get pestered by PR people and things like that? And how do you deal with that? Or do you have any advice for marketers who are trying to interact with you?
Man, so many thoughts.
Wait, don't worry, there's more mics to drop.
I don't really have, like, the more marketers I meet, the less of a problem I have with the marketers. It's more the field. Like, the field as a whole is, like, slimy, but every individual person's actually pretty cool.
By the time they've reached you, they've self-selected a little bit, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Unless they're just sending you email spam.
So if marketing is the dark side, the individuals are okay?
An average in Florida is actually a nice guy to have a cup of coffee with.
Sure, he won't, like, or...
Yeah. I have a couple of people that I just wouldn't talk to anymore, but generally speaking, they're all very sweet individuals. All right. So, well, with marketing, yeah.
I'd rather roll back, actually, and start with an easier question.
Okay,
regarding your blog,
yeah.
Do your coworkers know about it? Do they like it, or do they don't like it?
Okay, so my coworkers are aware of my blog. Actually, you know, my boss has written a couple of books on Perl, and I mean, we know each other because of my blog, because he was very involved. It's David Blank Edelman is my boss.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote The System Administrator's Guide to Perl, like, you know, whatever. So he's very involved in Lisa and that crowd, right? And so that my blog is actually how I got involved with that crowd. You know, it has opened more doors.
So he understands the benefits to your knowledge and to your effectiveness by being out there.
Exactly. In fact, I've been lucky. I've never worked for anybody who has had a problem with my blog. Because it opens so many doors, right?
Yeah.
So I know more people. I have more potential solutions and things like that because of my blog and because of the people I meet in events like this that I get invited to because of my blog. Like,
yeah.
It all goes back to that, right?
I mean, the best managers get that formula and just say, okay, awesome. We'll to an appropriate degree, take advantage of that and let you continue to do your thing. Okay, so now to the harder question of when people do want to pester you, what is your one gripe that bothers you, like, when people approach you? And then what is one way that people could approach you better?
So the thing that bothers me, I think, is probably the semi-fake form letter that people send and then get really upset, like a reply. So if you send me a form letter, I'm probably not going to read it, right? Like, yeah. I might laugh at it and then delete it. That's about as far as it goes. But then if you send me another letter, and this one's personal, and it's mad because I didn't reply to your original form letter, like, I'm really not going to talk. I'm extra double not going to talk to you then.
Yeah.
But marketing, you know, it's okay, right? I have a blog. I'm interested in learning new things. I'm not a bad person to approach about things like that. I'm going to probably be test driving a web thing that I replied to an email today. Because the person was like, you know, hey, you write about things kind of like this, you know. I'm interested in seeing what you think, and they don't just want to use me as a sales channel,
yeah.
Right? They want my input on their solution. And
okay.
I like that, you know, the fact that they appreciate me as a person and not as a potential sales, you know, income.
Yeah.
That's a really nice feature. And I think that personal touch is very useful.
And I'm going to reiterate that one, too. Influencers are not bullhorns. Please, everyone, stop trying to use them as such. Thank you. End rant.
Yeah. Yeah, like I don't, you know, press releases, like that's not my blog. Like you don't read my blog if you think I post press releases. That's, don't care.
How about retweeting our press release?
Yeah, no.
It does drive me crazy. I was reading some influencer marketing bullshit the other day and you know, they're talking about, you know, how to, you know, why you'd want to make an influencer marketing program, and that's kind of what I do these days. And they're like, and they will, you know, and it's a great way to get people to publish your content on their sites. I'm like, oh boy, you know, that's just... You know, that's just not the... It just usually doesn't work that way.
Exactly. I mean, I think even in the SEO world, like, that's not a great thing, right? Like, yeah, these 15,000 sites all say the same thing.
People want a magic button that you push and that you know, that makes your boss like you, and they think that anyway. So it's not... It's a...
Scale versus personal. Yeah, I mean, I think
it's about real people.
Yeah, you said people buy from people, people market with people, people learn from people. Yeah, it's not a magic.
It's about
Bible.
What, you know, what is Matt might be interested in doing something. What is he interested in? What are learning about? Like you said, learning. You're interested in learning. And if you're interested, you'll share with your readers.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it works.
And there are opportunities where you could be told no because that's not the right opportunity, but it doesn't alienate you from that person. It still creates the relationship that you can say no within that boundary.
Yeah, no,
strong advice for both influencers and marketers, you know, be honest and forthright about what you're interested in learning. If you're somebody who has something of interest, be honest and forthright about what you want from them. And let the natural, like, one-to-one relationship happen. And let their channels be the one-to-many. And that is measurable. You can be a good marketer and, like, get good information out of that in a way that doesn't invalidate the actual relationship between the two individuals.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for a herd of unicorns to trample Matt if he says metrics during a podcast.
I should have worn it. Oh my god, I have the best shirt. It's the Datasaurus Rex, and it's like it's a Stegosaurus but made of bar graphs. It's so cool. Sorry.
My birthday's around the corner.
Okay, all right.
Well, I think this has been great. Do we have some final thoughts or wrap up?
Well, you know, I always do love to ask the sort of you've got all this very interesting community experience. So can you give us a, you know, things you've learned the hard way, something you want to share with somebody else who's either joining a community or moderating? What's the one thing that you would say, don't ever do this again, take it from me?
Don't get emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Wow, easier said than done. Right?
So easier said than done. I mean, it's hard. You spend a lot of your time invested in making something, and you're going to get some negative feedback. Right, and when that happens, you can't take it personally, and you can't respond emotionally, right? So, the advice and the keynote that Scott Abel, the CEO,
he's
a terrible person. that Scott Abel said, you know, the same thing I do when I always get a bad email. I wait 24 hours before doing anything. That is really great advice because, you know, nothing will burn your bridges faster than responding knee-jerk to an email that seems to be besmirching your good character when, in fact, it's really a legitimate complaint.
Yeah, most of the time people are acting in good faith, too. It's hard to realize in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. But don't take things personally. Try to have a thick skin.
Wow, great advice.
Even when they're not acting in good faith.
Yeah.
sometimes
it's worth pretending that they are.
Well, great. Well, so, Matt, where can people find you on the Twitters and the blog, et cetera?
Okay, so I'm Standalone SA on Twitter, and my blog is Standalone SysAdmin, so standalone-sysadmin.com.
Awesome. Matt Simmons, who we now know works with Lisa in the Reddit SysAdmin community and blogger, and thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.